This is the Mentoring Developers Podcast, episode number 49. Here we go.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
This is Arsalan, and welcome to another episode of Mentoring Developers. Today's guest, her name is Liz Rush, and I am so excited to bring you to you guys and girls, because Liz reinforces my belief that anybody can achieve anything, especially in the field of software development. If you are someone that thinks about software development as a career, making software, being independent, and perhaps freelancing, and you have no experience doing this, you might wonder if you have what it takes. Well, Liz is a living example of what is possible, what can be achieved, and I think a true inspiration for all of us. I'm so happy to be able to talk to her and to bring you my interview with Liz Rush. All right, here it is. Hi, everyone. My guest today is Liz Rush. Liz, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
It's so good to have you because you have a lot of interesting stories in your career. Everybody that I interview has interesting stories, but you're a little bit unique.
Well, thanks.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. Who is Liz Rush?
Well, I am a web and iOS developer in Seattle. I made the transition into development a few years ago through a coding bootcamp. Right now, I'm working as a consultant at a wonderful consultancy called Foundry Interactive, as well as doing freelance development and evangelism work. Aside from code, I really like to speak at conferences and blog about making the career switch into development. And I'm also an alumna mentor for Ada Developers Academy, which is the nonprofit code school for women that I went through. So in addition to that, I also moderate our alumna Slack team where graduates and current interns connect over our experiences and share resources. And of course, outside of tech, I really enjoy doing volunteer work and feminist activism, and I have hobbies that include sewing and embroidery.
So I'm going, wow, this is incredible. And I think my audience right now is also thinking, wow, how long has she been doing this? You must have been doing it for 20 years. But I know that in the world of software development in any industry, a couple of years, 2-3 years, not a long time. But I mean, you're like hitting home runs after home runs. It's amazing.
Well, thanks. I've practiced my elevator pitch about who I am a few times, but. You're right. I've only been doing it a couple of years. I was part of the inaugural cohort of Ada Developers Academy. So this was a new boot camp for women in Seattle where we didn't pay any tuition. And we did a 6-month classroom portion and a 6-month internship at a Puget Sound area company. So I graduated from Ada Developers Academy about 2 years ago. Program's a year long, so I've been coding for about 3 years.
That is incredible. And not only that, there's something very unique about the way you're approaching this. Is it because... Okay, so let me explain myself. Not only that you are a professional software engineer, you're also a speaker and not just somebody who has given one or two talks. This is one of the things you do. You're also volunteering. You're an activist, right? You're doing all these things. You're putting yourself out there. And I know from experience, and I know from other people's experiences, when you are an activist and you have a message which is going to rub people the wrong way, you're going to have haters. And it makes life hard.
Definitely, yeah.
Especially if you're new and may not be as self-confident. May not have established yourself yet, not really sure if you lose your job or if you lose your income or you lose your current way of making money or something happens to it. There's uncertainty because you just started
And I know from experience that it takes a long time to really master your craft. So certainly, when you started giving talks, you are not an expert software engineer. You probably, so tell me a little bit, when you gave your first conference talk, how long had it been at that time since you started programming?
My first conference talk was a local conference called Cascadia Ruby. I gave a talk with a project partner of mine from the boot camp, Sing Wei. And Sing Wei Su and I gave a talk about our final project as kind of a case study. So we had not even graduated from our boot camp. We were about, I think, 8 or 9 months into learning to code when we decided to give that conference talk. And it was a wonderful experience. We ended up giving it at this local Ruby, regional Ruby conference, and then also RubyConf that year in San Diego. So it was a lot of fun, but you know, I think one of the great things in particular about the Ruby community is there is such an emphasis on how beginners and novices at programming have a certain way of sharing insights and knowledge that everyone can learn from, even if they're not expert software developers yet. So I think because we started out in the Ruby community, we were able to kind of grow that sense of confidence and be able to go out and do things like speak or volunteer at code events and things like that without feeling too intimidated.
That makes sense. Ruby is a very welcoming community. It's one of the best communities out there. If you're a new developer, if you want to be a developer, they'll welcome you with open arms.
Absolutely.
It's not going to be the case if you go to a Java group or a .NET group, or I would say even a Python group or a JavaScript group. You're going to be more intimidated. I think it's great that you were able to do it. But, you know, not everybody gets to do what you did. Was there something special about you? Or were you in the right place at the right time?
Wow, what a question to ask. I don't think that there's necessarily something special about me that made me feel like I could be more successful in that environment or giving talks and doing public speaking. But I do have to give a lot of credit to my upbringing and having a strong role model in my mother. She was an entrepreneur. She was the president of her own company, and she taught me from an early age that I have something to say, my perspective is valuable, and that I shouldn't be shy about using my voice where appropriate. So I think because of that upbringing, I've never been afraid to speak out or speak my mind, and that's really what's helped me make this transition into tech and be able to do public speaking. Because, you know, if I can be outgoing in any environment, then just because it's tech doesn't mean it should be more intimidating than anything else.
Yeah, I think the way I see things, entrepreneurship is an attitude, is not a profession. And you can be an entrepreneur inside a job or in whatever capacity you're in. And an entrepreneur has a voice.
Yeah, definitely. I think that really ties into how people view the word hustle these days. Like having a hustle or being someone with a lot of hustle, is a lot of that is about being outgoing and having an attitude of being assertive and self-confident.
Right. So here's the problem. Most of my listeners and most software developers are not extroverts. And they're not outgoing, and they're actually introverts. And it's the idea of going out there and butting heads and selling yourself. Essentially, the way I see hustle is being able to sell. It's don't give up and don't give in and be brash, right? Be in your face. Don't take no for an answer. We don't take no for an answer. That's the type of pushy salesman type thing that we don't like when we go to a store, but that's kind of what we're expected to be if you're an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I think there's some level of that. I think in software, we tend to also have this difficulty where we, you know, have this really false dichotomy of being an introvert or an extrovert. So you had touched on, you know, a lot of software engineers are introverts. But the funny thing is that I view myself as an introvert. Nobody else views me as an introvert because they see me out doing these things. But, you know, I like a lot of downtime. I really like being alone. I need time to recharge and be away from people. I find it incredibly exhausting and draining to do some of these things, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm not capable. So I think there's kind of like this conversation that often happens where people say, I can't do these things because I'm an introvert. And I don't think that's true. I think you can strategically be extroverted when you need to be or show that hustle without it having to be who you are. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean that just because you like public speaking, that's the core essence of who you are. And if you don't like public speaking, you can't do it. It's kind of one of those things where you have to push your own idea of what your boundaries are and what your limits are to see what you're capable of, even if it goes against your own self-image sometimes. That's how we learn and grow as people.
I'm so glad that you said that because I believe that too. And I think the important thing to realize is that when you are speaking in public, when you are giving a talk, or even when you're mingling with people in a social event purposely, right? You're there not because you're there, but you're there because you have a goal to achieve. Then it becomes a performance. So you out there in front of 100,000 or 100, I said 100,000, I meant to say 100, 100 or 1,000 people, but you could potentially be in front of 100,000 people. And you may not enjoy being in front of people, but you know that in order for you to achieve what you need to achieve, you need to give a performance. And
absolutely.
And after you've given the performance, you go back to your quiet life, and that's fine, right? And you don't have to be a celebrity, and you don't have to be the life of the party, but it's a skill. If you know how to speak to a group and give a presentation, but you don't enjoy it, you will use this tool to achieve your goal and then move on.
Totally. I absolutely agree. I think a lot of times there can be a little bit of confusion. And I've noticed this with other people I've seen move into technology from other industries. You know, there's a lot of emphasis on having kind of your own self-branding, which I think is a wonderful tool to advance your career. I do it. I try to curate my brand, as you might say. But there's also this failure to acknowledge that a lot of this is performance and it is practicing skills that you have and doing them, not necessarily the core of who you are. And I found that to be one of the things I really struggled with when I first got into programming was, you know, I knew that this wasn't the whole of who I am. And it feels oftentimes like programming can be seen as who you are. I am a programmer. This is my culture. This is who I am. This is how I behave. And this is what I talk about. This is how I spend my free time. But I think that really kind of limits not only how we view ourselves, but how we view other people who participate in the industry or who could participate in the industry if they saw themselves reflected in it.
Those are really good points, especially the point about branding. We talk about branding on this podcast a lot because you have an opportunity to present yourself in a certain way so that when people are looking for somebody like you, or maybe they're looking for you exactly, you appear in the way that you want to appear. And that's what you're talking about. The branding will include your online presence, your social media presence. It will include perhaps your resume, your LinkedIn profile, and all that stuff, but also how you conduct, right? If people are doing Google searches on you, what they find is part of that branding. And so that was something that struck me when my producer found you and got in touch with you about coming on the show. I didn't really know how to find you to do some research on you, so I just Googled you, and I found you right on the first page. Yeah. I think maybe the first or second result on Google. Because you have spent the time to to make sure if people are looking for LizRush software, obviously there might be others, but if somebody in software named LizRush, they'll find you. And when they do, they go to your website, which is, by the way, fabulous.
Thank you.
Really nice. And I was thinking I should ask her to make my website. It's nice. It's simple. And I don't think it's WordPress. It's just a static website, right?
No, I use the blogging platform Ghost. It's an open source CMS based on Node.
Nice. See? You're hanging out with the cool kids, the Node kids. So we're still old school WordPress people. Now, I've looked at a lot of CMS, especially in the Ruby world. There are lots of these types of CMSs that I think there's Jekyll. That's one, right? That
can that
generates a static site for you, so it's faster. And it's a nice idea, but sometimes you need a little bit more if you want to do some extra stuff and you don't have time to build a website. Then you use a CMS like WordPress, which has a lot of plugins and so on. In your case, your website is really your resume.
Yeah, it is. I think that's very true for most software engineers, especially people who work on front end as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So where can people see that website? I want to plug it in right now. So if people are listening to this podcast right now, they go in and check it out immediately.
My website is lizmrush.com. And it's just kind of where I keep blog posts and links to other resources. I don't blog super frequently, but I try to, when I can, talk about the projects that I'm doing and what I'm up to. One thing that I think, you know, we had talked about branding for a little bit. My blog actually came about as part of one of the projects for the bootcamp that I went through. So I think this was something that was really smart that the founders did. The founders of Ada Developers Academy, Bookus Worthy and Elise Worthy, they ensured that every student in the first group to go through the program had to have a Twitter account, and they also had to make a blog as part of their development studies. You know, blogging is kind of a great sample project to do in any language. You know, you've got posts and you have to relate them with categories or tags and dates, and you know, you get to learn a lot through building your own blog. So the program had us do that, and I thought it was very smart, and it's really helped my career. I was not on Twitter before I joined the boot camp, and they made us join Twitter even though I didn't really want to. And now I'm really into Twitter, and I've actually gotten jobs through Twitter, both freelance and full-time jobs. So I think that's one thing that, you know, people can start on that as soon as they get interested in technology. It's just participating in the community through Twitter and social media or blogging. And that just kind of naturally develops into your own personal brand.
How did you get a job offer from Twitter? I mean, did somebody just see your tweet and say, hey, do you want to work for us?
Well, a group of us from Ada Developers Academy, when we were students, we all got diversity scholarships to the conference Strange Loop in St. Louis, which has definitely remained one of my favorite conferences. And so we all went down there. And while we were at the conference, one of my peers was saying that she wanted to find a new job. We were all working in our internships, but she knew that that wasn't going to be a good fit for her. So she wasn't sure if she should tweet about it or not. And I said, well, I'll do it. You know, like, I don't care if somebody sees that we're looking for jobs on Twitter. So I just tweeted and put in the hashtag of the conference we were at. And a lot of people replied. And I ended up meeting someone that gave me my first job offer out of the bootcamp program.
That's an incredible story. I think the key takeaway for me is that you took initiative. And you are not scared. Most people would be a little bit scared to put themselves out there, show your vulnerability right now. You're needy. You need a job. But you can come at it from a point of view of somebody who's doing a transaction. You have a service that you are offering, and there are people who need the service. So you're not really asking for a job. It's not begging. You're offering your service. And that's totally fine. If you had a restaurant, you would put an ad, right? And you would think that's completely normal. And so yeah. I think, yeah, go ahead.
I think that's definitely true. I think it's also important to remember that people love to help, you know? That's one thing that I think is especially true in development communities where people are working in software and also have that intersection of caring about diversity in tech or getting more women into tech. So people want to help you. So, you know, if you tweet out that you're looking for a job or an internship, apprenticeship, whatever it is, and you ask people to retweet it, people will do it because it feels good to help other people. So I know that for me, even just tweeting like, hey, we're looking for jobs, anyone hiring, it helps me. But I also realize that it helps other people to find those connections as well. And while it may be a transaction to get a job, it's also a community action, right? Like if we think of it as a big developer community, we don't want people in our community who can't find a job. We have so many companies that need to fill roles and so many people looking for jobs that it's only natural that we want to help each other connect.
One of the things that strikes me about you is that you don't seem to have the inhibitions. You don't seem to have the hangups that a lot of us have, a lot of people who have only ever done software development. I feel like you have sort of the license to be different. And you're talking about how people expect you to be a certain way and act a certain way and make your life all about coding, programming, and be a geek. You know, there are some people who are like this, and traditionally that's how we've been. Software development has been a field that was basically occupied by nerds and people who like to be nerds, and that's all we did and that's all we wanted to do, and we didn't have a life beyond that. But things have changed. Software development has exploded. We are now in a place in the world where we need software developers at literally every company of whatever industry, and we need to build software of all kinds. So we don't find ourselves needing to be super geeky and building low-level software and microprocessor, you know, firmware and all that stuff. So I wonder, coming from an industry that's coming from another part of the universe and not the geek world, you got into programming. You didn't have the baggage first. Second, you brought with you some skills that a lot of us don't have. So tell me a little bit about what you did before you got into programming and how did you get started with that?
Sure, yeah. So I first became really interested in coding when I was working at a company in Portland that was a small tech company. I was hired on as an administrative assistant, and I did translation work for them. They had a web app that was in English, and they had a large customer base that was Spanish-speaking. So my background was in translation. I actually did my undergraduate degree at the University of St. Louis in Madrid, Spain. So I had been living abroad for about 4 years, working and living in Spain, and I came back to the U.S., started working at this tech company and doing translation. And the thing about translating a web app is that you translate it and then you're done. And so I was kind of left being like, well, what do I do with my time now? And I'm not one to really enjoy just sitting around doing nothing. So I ended up getting involved with the testing team and learning a little bit about testing. I had one manager who was really encouraging and taught me a little bit about test automation. That's what really sparked my interest in like, well, I don't want to just translate an app. I want to be the person building the app. So from there, I actually reached out to people I knew in my network, primarily through one of my older brothers, who's a software engineer manager. And he connected me with a female developer who volunteered to be my mentor. She and I would Skype about once every other week, and she tried to teach me a little bit of Rails over the course of a summer. And she heard about the development boot camp in Seattle that was just getting started called Ada Developers Academy, and she said I should apply. That's how I did it. It was just, it wasn't super thought out. I applied to the boot camp, and they accepted me and said I had to move to Seattle with less than 3 weeks' notice. So it was kind of like, why not? You know, I've done a lot of impulsive career changing or moving to different countries or what have you. And, you know, there's always ups and downs and bumps in the road, but I believe that things generally work out for the best. So I thought I'd just go for it.
And so you packed up and moved to a city where you didn't know somebody. Did you know anybody there?
I knew a few people in Seattle before I moved here. My brother lived here. And then, of course, I grew up in Idaho, which is not too far. And Seattle is one of the destinations where everyone who wants to grow up and leave Idaho ends up. So, I knew a few people, but it was mostly kind of like a blind, like, you know what? This is a cool code school. They've never done it before. I've never done it. And it's tuition free. So what do I have to lose?
Yeah, that is incredible. What's their business model?
Oh, it's really fantastic. It's very unique. So Ada Developers Academy is a business model where they have companies sponsor students. So what they did is they found companies large and small in the Seattle region that bought into the program and paid upfront for a student who would become their intern after 6 months. So lots of different companies around the area just paid in, said, we believe that these people can train 15 women to become developers in 6 months, which is what they did. And then at the end of the first 6 months, we all did interviews at these companies, and each one of them got an intern to work with for 6 months. So the business model is recruiting is hard. Finding women to work on your software team is hard. So if you invest in a student early, you can bring them on as an intern, train them up, have them learn the skill set and the workflow, the environment of your company. And if you're lucky, they're going to really like you and want to stay on and take a full-time role with you. So the business model is generally kind of thought of as a symbiotic relationship between companies that need developers and students who need real-world experience, not just a 12-week boot camp where you learn by yourself and then you're out in the world on your own. It really creates this strong community tie.
That is so smart. I think this is a great model for other schools, code camps, boot camps to follow. And there's a great need out there. I know there are a lot of these boot camps that are popping up everywhere. Well, we actually need more.
Yeah, I think we need more. And we also need kind of this sense of social responsibility and accountability. There are a lot of boot camps here in Seattle and across the nation. And a lot of them charge up to $20,000 for 4 months.
Yeah.
And that just seems a little bit out there. So I was really proud of the fact that I was able to get into a program that sees the value not just in training women, but seeing it as part of a larger ecosystem in the environment and part of this kind of economy of software in the Seattle region.
All right, let me play devil's advocate for a bit. I never do this. I've never done this before. This is a first, but I think I need to do it because there is a counter argument, and that's not my position. But I know lots of people actually believe this. Why should we care about women being software developers? What difference does it make? We should not pick people based on their gender. We should be gender neutral. And now we're just handing out these jobs to people who may or may not be qualified, but they're getting it just because they're women.
Yes, I've heard that one a lot. I've even heard that argument in interviews where someone is trying to hire me. But I think, you know, there's two things. And the first that I'll start with is the presumption that someone who is from a diverse background or who may be a minority is somehow immediately less qualified than they would otherwise be. So there's often this idea that if you're part of one of these diverse programs, or if you're a minority applying for a job, you're getting some sort of boost to get a job that you otherwise would not be qualified for. And what I usually think when I hear that is that the person has some, you know, unmitigated biases against other people, but also they just don't realize that I really kick ass at writing code. And I think that's something people forget is, you know, just because someone's a woman, if someone's a minority, if they come from a boot camp, that doesn't mean they're not technically skilled. And so that's one thing we have to keep in mind is that it's not an either or situation. And then, you know, to speak to the other part of your question about why should we care? Why should we be invested in hiring women and minorities? We're just writing software. I'd like to answer that with a little bit of a story. So I took a job at a small Seattle-based startup that was building a dating app. The company's name was Siren. And I was working on their iOS platform with a couple of other developers. All of my peers at the company, all of the developers were men. I was the only female developer. And, you know, we really got into this code base. There was some existing code base that we all got into, and things were going pretty smoothly. But we kept running into this problem where the original code base had all of these ideas built into the code about gender relations. So it's a dating app, right? So it would say, like, you know, a class might, you know, some a helper or a class might be named after, like, a male dater versus female dater. And, like, what does the view, what does the UI look like from a male looking at a female's profile, for example? And that, those assumptions were built into the logic of the code. And I got in there and I said, wait a minute, this is insane. Like, why is this restricted to only male members can look at female members and vice versa? You know, it was very strict about the way the profiles could interact based on those two things. And so I said, you know what, we really need to refactor this so that it's not based on whether or not someone's a man or a woman, who they can view and who they can't view. Because, you know, first of all, what about our LGBT community? And secondly, it makes the code extremely difficult to work with. So I started advocating, like, we need to change this because it's going to limit our ability to implement new features. And, you know, we put it off for a while because we, you know, we were a small team of like five developers. We didn't have a whole lot of time and money. And in the end, what happened is we kept hitting the same problem where we'd want to change something, but the biases built into the code made it more difficult to change it. And so eventually we had to do a giant refactor so that we could make the platform more inclusive of all types of relationships. And it made the code better. It was a business use case. And nobody else at the company, nobody else on the male development team spoke up about it. So that's why we need to hire women. It's not just because they're women, but because we often can see things from our perspective that might get missed if we have a homogenous development culture. It's a business case in most situations. We've seen all the studies, we've read all the articles about how diverse teams come up with more profitable ideas and solutions to business problems. So it's not necessarily only about doing the right thing. It's also about being the best we can at providing the skills we have and building out the correct kind of team to further our businesses.
Wow, wow, wow. If I had an applause button over here in my setup, I would press it right now because this was amazing. This was a good speech. In fact, I should take this snippet and, somehow extract it and tweet it out because well said, my friend. Because
thank you.
Because it's important that we realize that diversity is good on its own. You don't need a reason to have diversity. Or let me just put it this way. Having a diverse team is good on its own merit. Because once you have a diverse team, not only that you'll have a balanced outlook on what you're building, you will look at things that you missed and you will make a better product for your customers. Customers are going to like it, which means you are going to make more money as a business. So it makes a business case. But it's not just because you're a woman and you have a perspective on the LGBT community, right? Mm-hmm. And not every woman will have it. A lot of women will be, I can imagine, they'll be fine with the distinction of men are men are attracted to women and women are attracted to men. For a lot of straight people, this would be fine. But having diversity as a general rule, you can have people who are men. You can have team members who are women. You can have people who believe in this thing and believe in that thing. You can have people who are older and people who are younger. You can have interns and you can have people with gray hair. You can have all of these people working together. This team will necessarily be better than a team that is all women or all men or all 20-year-olds or all 6-year-olds.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different kinds of diversity that often get overlooked in favor of the, well, is it women or not women diversity conversation. And the truth of the matter is when you're forced to work with people who are different from you on whatever axis that might be, you learn skills about empathy and communication and working with people who are different from you. And that helps you grow as a person, but it also helps you be a better teammate. And that's really what's important about diversity, is that it makes your team stronger.
Right. And I say this on almost every episode. I'll say it again. Don't be scared of political correctness. And I don't know what you think about this, Liz, but it just makes me laugh and cry at the same time when I keep hearing this tirade against political correctness. Like, I don't want to be politically correct. I'm going to be honest and I'm going to be obnoxious. So don't be obnoxious. Be politically correct. Because offending people and hurting people's feelings and excluding people, this does not make you a better person and it does not make for a better team. If you have all one kind of people, I've seen this personally. And let me give you an example. I worked in a team a long time ago where we were building this very big SaaS app, a software as a service. Mm-hmm. And the test data was kind of R-rated. It had topics and it had data that nobody was going to see. It was test data. It was just for the developers, but everybody was a young male, 20s and 30s. And so it was cool. It was fun. But I can't imagine a woman being in the middle of that team and looking at that data. That would be embarrassing for everybody, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of times, even if you're not on a diverse team, it helps to put yourself in the position of, well, what if I was somebody who wouldn't be comfortable with this? Am I doing the right thing? And, you know, that can help guide how you run your team and how you interact with your teammates.
Absolutely. And having empathy with your teammates and thinking about the other, whatever the other is in your case, think about the other as you. What would you think? What would you do if you're in that position? When you do that with your teammates, invariably, you are going to do that with your customers and your users, right?
And this absolutely.
And we come back to the same point. Have empathy. Don't just have this tunnel vision where you're catering to your group. You know what's going to happen? If everybody started to do that, if everybody decided that I am not going to look at the wider world, I'm going to focus on, let's say that I'm making a dating app and I say this dating app is only for people who are straight. That, because that's the majority. So yeah. I'm going to focus on that. That's, you can sort of make that business case. You can say, well, I don't want to spend time catering for that. And then somebody is going to come around and say, well, 99% or 95, whatever percentage of people can see. So I don't need to worry about people who can't see, right? I don't need to make this website accessible, right? I don't care because they're a small minority. Why would I invest time on that? And if you keep going down that route over and over, you will find yourself producing an app or producing a software asset that will be racist and that will be bigoted and that will be narrow-minded. And when you look at it yourself at the end of it, you're not going to like it yourself. Because most people don't want to discriminate against others, right? What we say to ourselves is, well, I don't really have to care about this other, this quote-unquote other, because that person is maybe one of 100, or that maybe I'm not there physically. So I can go ahead and offend somebody that I don't see. So I think this, anyway, this is how I feel about this. Try to make your teams diverse and whatever Liz said.
Exactly.
Right. So was it easy for you to become accepted as a valuable member of the community? Now, I can say the community because you're really involved in the community. You are unique. You are young. You are a junior in a lot of ways, but you're putting yourself out there. Did people accept you as a woman? Did people accept you in the developer community?
You know, I have a lot of difficulty with this question in general. And, you know, I felt accepted by certain parts of the community, the larger development community. And I think a lot of that was due to the fact that I went through this nonprofit boot camp. The fact that it's nonprofit meant that the people who were involved in it because they had a reason that was not financially motivated. So I was already surrounded by really great people who wanted to see me succeed because they believed in the mission of the boot camp. That was fantastic. That really helped me as I transitioned into development. However, once I started working on development teams full time, I had a really difficult time. I did an internship as part of the boot camp, and I switched teams inside my internship company a few times, which, you know, I loved because I got exposed to a lot of different technologies. And there were some teams where, you know, I'd go to work and think like, man, these are my people. I fit in here. Like, this is great. And then I'd switch to a new team, and the first day on a new team, they might make rape jokes in front of me. And so it was hard. It was very difficult to suddenly put myself in a male-dominated industry, working with all men all the time, and still retain a sense of self-confidence. Part of that was because of the external factors of the things men say in male-dominated industries that can be really alienating for women. And part of it was also that, you know, we talk about these issues in tech so much that it can be intimidating when you go through a program like a boot camp and you're trying to make it, you're trying to get your job and just become a software engineer, but you also have to confront all these larger social issues. So I think that's one thing that makes it difficult is if you're a minority or a woman trying to get into tech or as a junior in technology, you don't just have to learn the technology. You don't just have to be a good engineer. You have to do those things and on top of it, confront these bigger social issues. And that was really hard for me when I first started. I found it very discouraging.
So do you think this is systemic? It's something built into the system, or is sporadic individuals here and there?
I think it's both. You know, and I say systemic and built into the system, but I don't mean just software. It's issues that plague basically every industry, especially those that are male-dominated. So it's not, you know, I say that it's a problem with the industry, and I don't mean for other people in the industry to take that personally. But we do have issues around that, and we have been seeing more and more women become more comfortable speaking up about some of the discrimination or difficulties they have with technology companies and trying to find a place to fit in when it has previously been so homogenous. There is sometimes this feeling that you're not wanted because you're playing with someone else's toys, you know, and you don't want the other person to throw a tantrum over playing with their toys. So I think that it can be really difficult. But it's important to kind of keep in mind the bigger picture. Something that really helped me as a new developer was, you know, I did face these issues that I view as systemic, and also occasionally individuals were problems. But, you know, in the end, I became quite literally empowered through learning technology. I ended up with a wonderful career that has a lot of job security. I increased my income by 3 times what I was making before I learned to code. And, you know, I got involved in a community where if something wasn't working, if a job wasn't working out or the culture was the wrong fit for me, I could just get up and walk away, you know, not just table flip and leave the room, but I could strategically find my way to something that's a better fit for me, because there are so many opportunities in this industry. And I think that's what's really empowering about it, is despite all of the stuff you have to deal with, despite the systemic issues, you can also carve your own path and figure out what works for you so that you can create this career you want.
Yeah, this is exactly right. If you are a woman, if you are somebody that considers, if you consider yourself a minority, or even if you're not, but you're shy and you feel like you're being left out, there are lots of opportunities. However, on behalf of the majority and on behalf of men, I'd like to say that I'm embarrassed to hear that all the stories that I hear about open discrimination, sometimes it's not really open and not really meant. Let me put it this way. There are people out there trying to discriminate against others. And there are people, sometimes they're not trying to do it, but they do it anyway because that's just their habit. And in some other cases, we have so many cases of women being sexually harassed. It's not a topic that we ever like to discuss. We never want to bring it up, but it happens. And it's shameful and it's embarrassing as a man to know that this happened. What do you think about it?
Yeah, it's a tough topic. And, I think the important part is being able to talk about it, because it's one of those things where if we hide it from the light, it becomes a bigger problem. And, you know, one thing that I have really benefited from was the network of women that went through the same boot camp that I did. We have a Slack team that we chat in all day, and it's been one of the best resources I've had, is having this network and community, because I've been able to bounce ideas off of other women and say, like, hey, like, this happened to me. Is that weird? And in fact, just today, a woman came into our channel and said, like, hey, none of the men on my team will speak to me. She said they didn't acknowledge her when she came in the office. They wouldn't make eye contact with her. They wouldn't even say good morning or hello. And she didn't know if it was normal or not, because this is her first software job. And so she was able to come back to her community and say, like, is this normal? And we, of course, all said, no, that's extremely unhealthy. It's not okay for people to treat you that way. And so now she's better equipped to go in and get the support she needs from her manager or her company. So that's kind of one of the things that I think is the most valuable, and something men can participate in as well, is talking about the issues makes it easier for us to figure out how to strategize fixing the problem.
Yeah, it just reminds me of a time where I worked at a place as a consultant, and there was a woman that people didn't like. People generally despised her, and I found out that what was going on there was she had complained about a coworker harassing her sexually, and then created this, and then he was fired. So then her reputation was that she is dangerous. She can get you fired. And I was just amazed that that's the reaction people have. Not the other reaction, which is, I can't believe it happened to her. We need to make sure this never happens to anybody again.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really common occurrence for a lot of women, and it's what prevents a lot of women from speaking out about their experiences. When I hear stories like that, I generally ask myself two questions, which is, what was everyone else doing? And it sounds like, you know, in the case of your story, people were alienating her and isolating her. And then the other question I ask is, what does the woman feel like? What is she feeling? Because a lot of times we hear these stories and we don't actually put ourselves in the person's shoes. And when I hear that story, I immediately just thought, wow, she must be so incredibly lonely and so isolated and feel so alone. And how can you be a valuable team member? How can you contribute? How can you all participate and work together really well if that's how one of the team members is being treated or how they feel? So, you know, it's kind of horrifying to hear these stories, but they happen, and they happen more frequently than we like to believe.
Yep. And this is one of the reasons I started this podcast, because the topic or the goal for this podcast is not to talk about harassment, is not to talk about diversity only, but that's part of the conversation. We want to help people, help new developers get into this industry. We want people who are struggling a little bit to feel that they can make it. And if they have been a little bit down because they feel that they don't belong, we want to encourage them and say, you do belong. And other people have gone through this and they have survived. So that's one part of the equation, where if you are somebody who is struggling, we're all here for you and we're going to help you. But on the other hand, we want to talk to the people who make hiring decisions, the people who manage teams, and men in general, and other people who are in power. We have to be more accommodating. We have to open our industry, open our companies, and literally open our hearts to others, others that we might fear, others that we might not respect. We may not like them. They may be a little bit too strange, too different. They may have a little bit of an accent, or they may not be your buddies. You may not be able to go and have drinks with them. But that's not what work is about, right? You can, when you go home, you can be as racist as you like.
Hopefully not at all.
Well, if you like to just joke around and take it easy and say things that may not be politically correct, but that's your entertainment, you don't have to do that at work. Work is something that we need to protect the work environment. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think that also kind of plays into what we touched on earlier about this feeling that if you're a software developer, you know, you should live this life where you're, you know, a pure geek or pure nerd. This is what you do and this is who you are. But that kind of is where we get all these unhealthy work environments, is there's no separation of who you are as a professional and who you are as a person. And there should be some overlap, like in your values. I believe, you know, if you value empathy and caring and having ethical decisions, that sort of thing should carry over. But of course, your personality shouldn't be the only thing determining where you work or who you work with or the people you want to interact with. And I think that we're seeing with more and more conversations growing, like your podcast and more and more articles being written about diversity in technology, we're going to see people start to expand their ideas of what it means to be at work versus not at work, and what it means to be a programmer who does programming as a job and not necessarily as a core essence of your total human being, you know?
The essence of your being, you. So people like to breathe code. And it's really good for some people to be in this all the time, but that can't be our standard.
Exactly, yeah.
So I think we can just keep talking on and on and on for hours, and I had such a good time talking to you.
Yeah, I had a good time. Thank you for having me.
And I didn't even get to the questions that I wanted to get into. I want to talk to you more about your choice of being a freelancer, because I think you're a freelancer, and that's a very, very interesting choice, because I've been a freelancer, and sometimes I'm not, and sometimes I am. And I know that's an interesting choice, a difficult choice, and that's a choice that a lot of people have questions about. I have questions about it. I want to talk to you about that. I want to talk to you about mentorship and conferences and skills and technology. Just so much more to talk to you. We just don't have time today, so we're going to have you on at a later time. What do you think?
I would love to come back.
So this has been a blast. And we just have to cut it short now because we are out of time. Liz, how can people get in touch with you?
You can reach me on Twitter. My handle is Liz M. Rush.
Yeah, she's Liz M. Rush everywhere. I noticed that. That is just an accident, right?
Oh, no. Very planned. Very planned.
Absolutely. This is part of her branding, which is amazing. And her website is amazing. Go to her website. Again, I don't have to tell you what it is because I think it's probably lizmrush.com, right?
It is.
Oh, what a coincidence. All right. And obviously, if you are listening, go to the website for this podcast, mentoringdevelopers.com. Find the URLs are very easy because if you're listening to this episode, let's say this is episode 49, then you want to see the show notes, the transcripts, all the links that Liz talked about. You can find him at mentoringdevelopers.com/episode49. Isn't that easy? It's pretty simple. So do that and sign up for the mailing list where I am talking about a whole lot of stuff, how to be successful. And I'm going to talk to you about how to get your first job, what are some of the steps you need to do, and just opening up myself to the audience. You can ask me questions, and I can answer them. I respond to emails really as frequently as I can. So go to mentoringdevelopers.com/list to sign up. And Liz, once again, it was amazing talking to you, and we'll have to have you back on later.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed the show. You can read the highlights and show notes with links on mentoringdevelopers.com/episode and the number of the episode. For example, mentoringdevelopers.com/episode 10 or /episode 25 and so on. Let me know what you think about this episode. If you'd like to ask a question or if you have a comment, you can email me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. Oh, and one more thing. I really want you to be part of the show, even if you are a little shy. So go ahead and type mentoringdevelopers.com/join in your web browser. This will open a Google form where you can tell me what topics interest you and what dates and times you're available for about an hour or so. Everyone is welcome, and I would be thrilled to get a chance to talk to you. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you at mentoringdevelopers.com/join.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.